Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante. He is Dustin Schutte, Big Ten writer for Sports Illustrated. And Dustin, we had a huge, huge weekend in Big Ten football, didn't we?
We sure did. I think a couple games and then some lived up to the hype. So it was a really fun game, a really fun weekend in the Big Ten last week, and kind of across the country too.
Oh yeah, it's now reached the point, I think, this season, Dustin, where you've just got to kind of expect either a top 10 team losing to someone they shouldn't, or at least really, really getting scared.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that anybody's safe in this era of NIL transfer portal, as we've seen. I mean, we talked about it a few weeks ago. Alabama lost to Vanderbilt. We saw in the Big Ten a ranked 5-1 Illinois team almost lost to a unranked Purdue team that I think is probably the worst in the Big Ten, one of the worst in power football. So there are no safe weekends in college football anymore.
No, there's not. And Illinois almost lost at home, as did Alabama almost losing at home. So, you know, we have this narrative going on in the Big Ten specifically. If you cross two time zones, you know, the record is 1-8. And I'm using that as my segue, Dustin, into the two biggest games of the week were Penn State, USC, and Ohio State at Oregon. And you had Penn State and Ohio State both traveling to the West Coast, both, you know, that away team. Now, they both were favored, but not by very much. I think a lot of money went in on Oregon and USC, a lot of it based on that premise of it's hard to travel and win.
Yeah, and it was going into that game, going into both of those games, that was the statistic, 1-8, and Indiana winning at UCLA was the only one that was the outlier there. So what's interesting to me is I don't know. I would like to know what that game would be like, the Penn State-USC game, what that game's like if it's played in Happy Valley. I think maybe Ohio State wins in Columbus, but I think that game looks a lot similar, that Oregon-Ohio State game. I think it would look similar no matter where that one was played. Those were just two really, really good football games. And three of the four best teams in the Big Ten and we're on display, and we got really entertaining football at both the 3:30 and the 7:30 time slots.
And Dustin, I'll hit on something you and I have talked about multiple times. I'll even go back a year or so. Remember when there was this alliance? Was it the, who all was involved? ACC, Big Ten, and Pac-12. And you and I figured, you know, that these games across these conferences would be so much fun. Well, it didn't quite work out that way with the alliance, but we would not have USC, Penn State, or Oregon, Ohio State without those West Coast teams joining the Big Ten.
Yeah, and it created a lot of entertainment. And I think there is, I fall in this category where it's like, you want to see really good football. You want to see those kind of matchups, but you're still a traditionalist. You want to, you know, the 11 Big Ten teams that, and, you know, we were willing to allow, you know, Nebraska and Rutgers and Maryland into the Big Ten and into our picture there. But so it's been a good thing. Those three of the four teams have contributed significantly. Washington pulled off the upset last week, beating Michigan. And then you had Ohio State and Oregon's obviously very good. USC, even though they've lost three games, those three losses have all come by a touchdown or less. So they're putting up a fight. The only one that's not delivering is UCLA, but it's hard to blame them because Deshaun Foster was kind of thrown into the fire with Chip Kelly leaving to go to Ohio State.
Yes, you can't. I'm not going to come to any conclusions about UCLA going forward on what we've seen so far. And I'll tell you what, having this as the first time that I really got a good look at USC. Boy, that's a dangerous team with several very good players, a good quarterback, several good receivers. And I don't know if now, with getting their third loss, that they might pack it in. You know, there's no playoffs for them now with three losses. But if at their best, that's a good team that can beat a lot of very good teams. I think we saw that with LSU.
Yeah, and what's funny to me, Jim, is I was talking to some people, I think it was last week, like, look at how much the narrative has changed about USC in the matter of, what, like 4 weeks? This was before they even lost to Penn State. After that LSU game, I thought they looked better than Oregon. And talk about ultimate knee-jerk reaction. It's like, okay, maybe USC is headed for the Big Ten championship game. I think I had them at number two or number three in the power rankings at one point. Like, and then they lose on the road to Michigan. And then they get upset a week or a couple weeks later on the road at Minnesota. And then they lose this game to Penn State. But this is the only gripe I have with the 12-team play. Well, the college football playoff in general is that traditionally, I think you would look at a 3-3 USC team and you'd say, this is still a really good football team. There's still a lot to play for. They could still get to a BCS level bowl game. But now, because it's playoff or bust, as you said, there were players that opted out after they lost their second game. And so what's it going to look like now for Lincoln Riley now that you're 3-3 and you really don't have a marquee game on that schedule until the final week when you play Notre Dame? They play Maryland. They've got Rutgers, Washington, Nebraska, UCLA, USC. I mean, maybe some of those teams are going to be ranked, but there's not one that really pops up to you that would get maybe your players excited. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens this week out in California. But maybe some of the guys that have opted out, maybe that's all that's going to opt out, and we'll see this team, see what it can really do here in the next, you know, six games.
Well, I understand the issue, you know, hey, now it's playoffs or bust, but a year ago, it was also in some ways playoffs or bust, but you only had four teams.
Exactly.
And, you know, a handful more involved. Now, at least with the 12-team playoff, I think you probably have at least 20 teams who feel legitimately like they can make it. You know, just looking in the at the Big Ten, the obvious Ohio State, Oregon, Penn State, but teams like Nebraska, Illinois, Indiana, all got to feel like they've got a shot at it. It's still in front of them.
Oh, absolutely. And that's what we talked about. This is when you expand a 12 team, and that's why I should have clarified my comment. Like, since the college football playoff was when it came to fruition in 2014, that's when you started seeing some of this. But yeah, I mean, this is keeping more teams in the fold longer. There are teams that I think could even lose two games, and they're probably going to be a contender to get into the playoffs. So even if you lose a second game, your season's far from over. Now you've got to beat some pretty good teams. I mean, there's some matchups in the Big Ten and the SEC we'll see later in the season where, I mean, those are still going to be slobber knocker games, right? So, and I just want to point out, I know we talked about this last week or a couple weeks ago with Alabama, Georgia. You think those guys didn't want to win Oregon, Ohio State? Maybe it's not do or die like it was a few seasons ago where you have to win that game to feel like you're getting in. But now it's advantage Oregon, right? If they beat Ohio State twice, that might be the end of the Buckeyes. If they split, then they both get in and we'll get potentially a third really good football game between those two teams. So it did not diminish anything from that game on Saturday night.
Dustin, either we're doing too many shows together or you're reading my notes, because that was my very next question. And I feel the same way. I don't think that game lost anything because of the fact that Ohio State and Oregon might, and you might even be able to say probably both will make the playoffs. I think they played just as hard, and there was still a lot at stake. Think about this for Ohio State, and I want to get your reaction to it. If you're Ryan Day, now, you can still lose the second game and still probably make the playoffs, but you can't lose a third. Right. How much pressure do you think he's going to feel in a couple weeks when he's in Happy Valley?
Well, that's the great question, because now there is still that pressure, and it's not to just win every game. You have to, if you want to secure your spot in the playoff, you've got to win out. Okay, I'd say 10-2 puts it in the hands of the committee. Is how they would probably get in, but that puts it into the hands of the committee. So you've got a Nebraska team that will have either one or two losses. They'll probably be favored heavily in that game, but that's not going to be a pushover game. Then they got Penn State. Then you have an Indiana team that right now is 6-0. I know they haven't played anybody, but that'll be a tough game. Then you finish the season at Michigan. You cannot have a slip up anywhere else on that schedule. So that adds a level of intrigue to the rest of the season. And so that's it. None of it diminishes because they lost a game. It almost makes it more must-watch television, right?
Oh, I really agree. And when you list the teams that Ohio State's going to play, you omitted those Purdue Boilermakers, who I think showed some signs of life last week, Dustin. But the point you make is valid. All of those games become just super critical now for Ohio State, and with all the pressure they had on them going into this season. You know, they have the best talent. They've spent all the money. They're contributors, the NIL people went all in on this season for Ohio State. I think Ryan Day is going to feel a lot of pressure. And could you imagine if he has two losses going into that game against Michigan?
I mean, pitchforks and torches. If he gets two losses, they're already wanting to move on from him, and it's like, who are you going to bring in? But yeah, it puts a lot of pressure. And I bet Ryan Day next year, depending on, you know, regardless of what his roster looks like, maybe he'll call up Urban Meyer and Jim Tressel and just say, hey, how about you don't tell everybody this is the best roster we've seen in 20 years? You know, let's temper expectations at least a little bit.
Just hold that to yourself. You know, if you want to whisper it to each other, no, don't make that public. We don't need that here. Well, I think the conclusion to all this, Dustin, is just there are so many more games that still mean so much. And it's all attributed to, you know, the 12-game playoff and something you pointed out too, the transfer portal. We all talked about talent going up, but it's also gone the other way and made some of these teams really dangerous. All right, that's it for quarter number one. Lots more to go, including Dustin's power rankings. I got a bone to pick with you. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hall Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing. Built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. I am with Dustin Schutte, Sports Illustrated Big Ten writer. It's quarter number two. Did I already say it's quarter two, Dustin?
I think you said it's quarter two.
All right, so I'm repeating myself. In case anyone doesn't know, it's quarter number two. We're talking Big Ten football. And Dustin, we didn't really get into any specifics on the games from last week. We did start to talk about them, though. Two huge games on the West Coast and how great it was. These new teams coming into the Big Ten. And yes, there are issues with traveling and all that. You lose some of the regional games that everybody always enjoyed. But I got to tell you, Ohio State, Oregon, Penn State, USC, they were must-see TV. Absolutely. So, love both these games. I just want to get some of your thoughts on the games themselves. Penn State down 20-6. At that point, are you saying to yourself, well, there you go. They traveled two time zones.
Yeah, I think I was. First, I got to say this because this is my nerdiness. So Penn State 33, USC, Penn State, USC 33-30, Oregon, Ohio State 32-31. Both of those final scores ended at 63. That means nothing to anybody, but I just thought it was neat. but yes.
Very comparable with the scoreboard.
I just wanted to prove that I could do math on this show. So
I think when I was watching that game, yes,
it got into my mind that this travel thing is a real issue, because earlier in the day, Washington had lost to Iowa, and like significantly. That was a 40-16 drubbing. Washington kept it in it for a little bit, but I think that did creep into your mind. At the same time, you also have faith that James Franklin and Penn State has been a second half team, second half coach for a majority of his time in Happy Valley. So like you never really gave in, but there was also like, oh boy, is this going to be the one that James Franklin squanders? And they figured it out. Tyler Warren is a dude. I don't know if he touches the football enough to be a Heisman candidate, but that dude is without question the Mackey Award winner. You should just give him the trophy now. What I thought was most impressive, though, about Penn State's performance is when you play a 12-game schedule, 13 if you get to the championship game, you have to figure out ways to win ugly games against good teams, and that's what Penn State did. They overcame, what, was it 3 or 4 turnovers? I know Aller had 3 interceptions in that game. That's not a good recipe when you're going on the road to play a good USC team that can score a lot of points. I think the defense was stressed a little bit in that game, but you found a way to win it ugly, and winning ugly trumps losing pretty any day of the week. So that's what I was most impressed with in Saturday's game from Penn State. You were down, you faced a lot of adversity, you played ugly football. At times the tackling looked really bad again, like shades of that Bowling Green game popped up, but they found a way to win. And I thought that that was a very, you look at USC 3-3, but I thought that that was a very strong win for Penn State and something they can build off of, because you say, hey, you know what? We didn't play our best football, far from it, but we got a win on the West Coast against a good football team. Let's learn from this. Let's build on this.
Well, as someone pointed out to me, you know, USC losing to Minnesota the prior week, they were essentially one play away from winning the game, at which point this would have been a matchup of two top 10 teams. And so I think, again, USC might pack it in after their third loss, but if they play to their capabilities, I think that's a really good USC team. And some of the teams left on their schedule, like Rutgers, like Washington, like Nebraska, USC playing at the top of their game is going to be tough for them to beat.
Oh, yeah, for sure. This is a good team. And as I said, all three of their losses have been by one possession. You mentioned Minnesota. They're a play or two away. And Michigan, they're a pick six late in that game away from beating Michigan. I mean, you were talking about two undefeated teams going head-to-head on Saturday. It's not like USC lost those games by 17 points and were never competitive and Penn State squeaked out a team. This is still a really good team. I know Lincoln Riley, there are probably some rumblings about whether his job is safe after a 3-3 start, but this is still a really good football team. He's still a really good football coach. So the Minnesota loss is the ugliest, but that happens in college football. Like Minnesota is the weirdest team in the Big Ten. So that was their introduction to the conference, was like, good luck trying to figure out Minnesota, because they'll lose to North Carolina, and then they'll come out and they'll turn around and beat a top 10 team. They're just impossible to figure out.
Yes. And the other thing, going back to the Penn State game, that I thought, I called this the really coming out party for both Tyler Warren and for Drew Aller to the national audience. We all knew what Tyler Warren could do. Okay. I've had multiple people tell me, he's the best athlete on the team. Okay. You don't often hear that about a tight end.
Sure.
Okay. But then also for Drew Aller, I think those of us who watch Penn State every week, we've seen the skill level there, but he's not been asked to win a game prior to this. His most passes he's had prior to this game was 24. And all of a sudden he threw over 40. And I do have to point out, with his three interceptions, not a good formula, but one of them was the Hail Mary at the end of the game, end of regulation. Don't count that. And I still think one of the two was to the backup tight end, who really didn't help him by coming back to the ball. Sure. And it was tipped, you know. So not to make excuses, but I think when you, on the surface, say three interceptions, there's certain assumptions you make about the quarterback didn't have a good game. I think nothing could be further from the truth on that one. Let's talk a little bit about Oregon, Ohio State. And this is, no matter that whether it was a well-played game, there was a lot of talent on that field and a boisterous crowd who understood the significance of this game. And I thought Ohio State would, going into the game, was the much more talented team, would win this game. I don't want to say easily, but it would be at least a touchdown to 10-point game. And Oregon proved me wrong here, Dustin.
Yeah, and I think what was super surprising, at least on my end, was we've seen Dylan Gabriel stretch the field a little bit through the first five games, and I wondered if he was going to be able to do that against Ohio State's defense. It's, you know, the silver bullets, the daunted secondary, right? Like, they were highly praised coming into this game, and for good reason. But, man, Denzel Burke is going to need a little aloe. He got burnt regularly in that game. And I think Dan Lanning, I think Dan Lanning is maybe a better coach than Ryan Day. I think that Ohio State still has better athletes, but I think that he schemed them up really well. And again, I don't know who wins the game if it's in Columbus. I don't know who wins the game if it's on a neutral field. But I thought that Oregon was able to use its playmakers more advantageously than Ohio State did. And look, this was a toss-up game. 32-31, that's probably a game played 10 times. Each team wins 5 times. But that was obviously a huge game for Oregon. The onside kick was massive in Oregon's favor. I still think that was intentional. There's some rumblings. I don't know. Have you seen, Jim, where the late-game penalty was quote-unquote, like, intentional?
Yes.
To get time to, like, I don't know if I buy that, but if it was, that was pretty smart thinking. So there's just a lot of unique things about this game. But I think the most impressive thing is two things we worried about, or at least I worried about early in the season: Oregon's offensive line. I don't think that's a problem anymore at all. And then their ability to stretch the field and throw the ball so that way they can mix it up offensively, work in the run, work in that screen game. And I think that they proved that they can throw the ball down the field too.
And you know what's interesting? When we talk about coaches, it's always black and white. They're good or they're bad.
Yeah.
And Dan Lanning, a guy who's willing to do different things, he's willing. We saw that in his losses to Washington, where when you make the play, take the risk, and it doesn't work, oh, what a terrible coach. When it works, that onside kick, it doesn't work, everyone's saying, what in the world is he thinking? When it works, he's a genius. So that's the problem with being a genius. It better work. So, but there were also a couple other games that were interesting. You alluded to it. Washington went to Iowa. Again, this travel thing. And, you know, I'm beginning to believe there is something to it. And Washington, they gave up 40 points to Iowa.
Yeah.
I thought this was that Washington defense you were telling me about here, Dustin.
Well, it was, but it was also the Washington offense that gets in the red zone and then runs into a brick wall for whatever reason. Like, they cannot score in the red zone. They have had 28 red zone trips, 14 touchdowns, 7 field goals, 7 empty visits.
Wow.
Abysmal. So, and then what happened was Iowa was able to just wear them down, and to the point where Caleb Johnson's able to do whatever he wanted on the ground with them, right? Like, that was a 23-10 game, which Iowa's still probably going to win that game, but you're in that game. And then the fourth quarter, they just outscored them 17-6. So, like, it was, I still think Washington's defense played fairly well for a majority of that game. But when your offense isn't helping you in any regard, that's going to be a big problem. And this is a team that had just beaten. Like, this is what's interesting to me about the West Coast and the East in the Midwest travel is that Iowa is eerily similar to Michigan, right? Like, they can both run the football. They both have really good defenses. Neither one can pass. Like, I don't know if they know that the forward pass has been invented yet in either of those locations. Washington had a convincing win over Michigan on the road, gets smoked by Iowa. Part of that is college football and the unpredictability week to week, but part of it I do think has to deal with that travel.
Yeah, there's travel and also home field advantage. I know from being at so many games at Penn State and whiteout games, just what an advantage that is. Kinnick Stadium, same kind of thing there at Iowa. And I think even at Oregon, that there was a tremendous home field advantage, not just disadvantage Ohio State for having to travel, but advantage Oregon for playing in front of their home fans. So that is very much part of it. And in the Big Ten, I still think outside of Oregon, those West Coast teams are going to need to get used to, here's the Big Ten style of play when you play Minnesota, Michigan, Iowa. Anyway, that is it for, by the way, quarter number two. Lots more to go when we come back in quarter three.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. I'm Jim Galante. He is Dustin Schutte, Sports Illustrated Big Ten writer. We are talking all things Big Ten football. And Dustin, every week, comes out with his power rankings. It's been Ohio State number one from the beginning. And finally, Oregon beating Ohio State. They vault up your rankings, the Dustin Schutte rankings. We've got a new number one. It's Oregon.
Yeah, very official rankings. But Oregon, now with a nice win over Ohio State, I think that they have to be number one. You take down number one, you get that number one spot. Again, I don't know if I have anything else to add to it other than, you know, just I think the concerns I had were answered. And maybe this defense isn't as good. I think Dan Lanning still wants to hang their hat on the defensive side, but they played a really good Ohio State offense. So Oregon has passed every test. It was ugly the first two games against Idaho and what has actually turned out to be a pretty good Boise State team. So I'll give them a pass on that. But outside the first week of the season, Oregon has just appears to be getting better each and every week.
And I'm glad you mentioned Boise because that game was at Oregon, right?
Yeah.
And they lost, 37-35?
Yeah.
Very comparable to how Ohio State lost that game. So I think that legitimizes Boise State, and it also legitimizes Oregon. So I think the point you make, Dustin, is Oregon wins, they vault to number one. You're Ohio State, you lost. You lost the game. You dropped. You're not undefeated anymore. So number two in your power rankings would be another undefeated team. Like, oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. You have Ohio State. Did I mention they lost last week?
You did.
They lost? Okay. So Ohio State, those losers, you still have them number two ahead of Penn State, who you dropped a ranking. What did Penn State do this past weekend, Dustin?
They won in overtime.
Okay. So they won. Ohio State lost, but you keep Ohio State ahead of Penn State. You don't owe me an explanation, Dustin. You don't owe me anything. I'm a journalist, unbiased in all of this. However, I think my listeners want to understand how you still have Ohio State ranked higher. Now, oh, by the way, in the national rankings, the AP top 25, mm-hmm. Penn State is third, right behind Oregon. Ohio State is fourth behind the Nittany Lions. Go ahead.
All right. So I think I assumed I was going to catch some flack, not just on this show, but, you know, once I put that out there that Penn State's still undefeated, should be number two, have taken care of business. They also have had, probably a tougher schedule to this point. I mean, Ohio State has played the better opponent, but in terms of like top to bottom, Penn State's
lost
schedule has probably been a little bit tougher. But I think because that game ended the way it did, like 32-31, it was back and forth all game long. Ohio State is a few seconds away from maybe kicking a game-winning field goal. I still think they're the second-best team right now. Now, Penn State in a few weeks gets a chance. They get a chance to get up to number one or number two with a win over Ohio State. So they'll get that chance. Had this been like a comfortable Oregon win, if it was 32-22, I would have put Penn State in that number two spot. But since it was so close, flip-flop, again, I think if you played that game 10 times, they each win five. I just think they're that evenly matched. So it was hard for me to put Ohio State too far down. Had it been more decisive, I would have had no trouble putting Penn State in the number. Which, by the way, here's the funny aspect of this, Jim, is Penn State was number two last week. They've been number two for a while, and I actually dropped them despite them winning. So my apologies, Nittany Lion Nation.
I'm not, as a spokesperson for Nittany Nation, I'm not sure I accept the apology or not, Dustin, but what choice have I? You've spoken. You made your list. Folks, don't send your complaints to me.
Yeah.
Send them to Dustin, at Dustin Schutte.
Find me on Twitter. There you go.
Next up, you're Indiana Hoosiers. Still undefeated, Dustin. At what point, I know you've been pretty high on them for a while. You were also high on Purdue, but we'll let that go. But you've been, at what point should the rest of us start taking Indiana seriously?
I would say this week, because we are going to find out a lot about this Indiana team this week, because Nebraska's defense is really good. Now, their offense isn't great, so it's going to be interesting, because I think you're going to see a really good Indiana offense against a really good Nebraska defense. You're also going to see a middle-of-the-road Nebraska offense. I don't think it's bad, but I think it's not great against an Indiana defense that gave up 28 to Maryland and 24 to Northwestern, if I have my games correct. So what's going to happen when Indiana doesn't score 40 points? Because I don't think they're going to this weekend. Can they win a grinded-out type of game, which is what Nebraska is going to want to do? If Indiana wins this game in impressive fashion, then I think if you're Penn State and you're if you're Ohio State, you're maybe scratching your head. You're a little bit concerned about this Indiana team. If Nebraska wins, then I think some of the steam goes away.
And, you know, you got to give a little of the momentum then to Nebraska.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Because that's a 5-1 football team that their only loss is to Illinois, which also a 5-1 football team. So those three, this is going to be a really interesting weekend. I think it would have been great if those two teams were both ranked. I think they both are in the coaches poll, but not the AP. But I think that's sneakily, there's a reason Big Noon Kickoff is going to that game. Like I think that's going to be one of the more entertaining games of this weekend.
I think that's a not so sneaky good game. And you've talked about this before, Dustin, when you do your power rankings, you know, hey, in that top tier is Oregon, Penn State. I mean, Oregon, Ohio State, and Penn State. Yeah, sorry, slip of the tongue. Then in that next tier, you know, where does the tier end? I think you have Indiana, Illinois, Nebraska, Iowa, and Michigan, at least, right?
Yeah, I think so. And that would go down to number eight. You could, man, this is tough. You could potentially make an argument for Minnesota and USC. So that would put it down to 10 because of the way, like, Minnesota's won back-to-back games to beat USC. They beat UCLA, which I know UCLA is not great, but doing it on the road. USC, as we've talked about earlier, even though they're 3-3, I think that's still a really good football team. Michigan, like, they've got to figure out their passing attack, but does anybody want to play them on any given Saturday? Not necessarily.
No.
So I don't think there's one team in that tier right now that I say, yes, this is by far the better team of the six.
And, you know, crazy as it sounds, Wisconsin is getting, they are next. They are getting their act together.
Yeah, you know what? I could throw Wisconsin in there too, because what they were not good the first four games, 2-2, struggled to score. And I think they've scored a total of 94, like they've outscored their opponents 94-13 in the last two games. Now it's Purdue and Rutgers, but we thought Rutgers was going to be pretty good, Jim. And turns out they are, when they are met with a strong opponent, oof, that was not pretty.
No, it was not at all. And it was at Rutgers, and yeah, their ability to turn things into a rock fight, that didn't happen. And I would have thought Rutgers could have been part of that. But now all of a sudden, you say Indiana, Illinois, Nebraska, Iowa, Michigan, Minnesota, USC, Wisconsin. If any of them play each other, I'm not so sure I wouldn't just favor whoever the home team is.
Yeah, that's a good point, because Minnesota, remember, they were a onside kick, quote-unquote, penalty away from having a chance. Now, we don't know if they would have scored or not, having a chance to tie or take the lead in that game, right? So it's a really good – what I thought was funny, though, when I did this was, like, the teams that I had ranked – eight, I can't even remember what it was, but like Michigan, who I have at number eight, beat Minnesota, who I have at number nine, who beat USC, who I have at number 10, who beat Wisconsin, who I have at number 11, who beat Rutgers, who I have at number 12, who beat Washington, who I have at number 13, who beat Northwestern, who I have at 14. So for a while there, it just felt like, okay, I don't know that I'm great at ranking these teams, but at least there's some, like, I think this team should be better. No, they actually won the head-to-head, so that's why I placed them there.
Well, yeah, there's no doubt from, you know, number 4-13, there's some logic at least to what you're doing.
Right.
1-3, no logic at all. But
well, really, it's 2-3. I think we can agree on number one right now.
Yes, legit. Okay.
Two and three, I just drew a name out of a hat. Whichever one I grabbed, that's where I put them.
You're good at number one, and you're good at 4-13. And I'll tell you what, from 14-18, does anybody care?
Let me tell you, I will say this. I am intrigued about Northwestern. And the reason being is last year, if anybody remembers, Northwestern got off to an atrocious start. I don't remember what their record was, if they were 2-3 or 2-2, 3-3. Beside the point, that was a team that struggled through the first half of the season, got it together, and ended up winning 8 games with their bowl victory. So, like, they looked really good in that game against Maryland. I think this is a rebuilding year for Mike Locksley. They don't look nearly as good as they did the last 2 years with Talia Tungavailoa at quarterback. But I will say I am intrigued about Northwestern. That's the one kind of wild card I would say. I'm not sure where this team is going just yet. But to your point, the other four, not very good.
Nah. Well, I'll tell you what, whenever we talked, Dustin, I have up on one of my screens here, the Big Ten schedule. So I got to always glance over.
Yeah.
You make a legitimate point with Northwestern, but look at the rest of their schedule. Wisconsin, who we think turned a corner, at Iowa. They play Ohio State. They play at Michigan, and they finish up with Illinois. That's 5 out of their last 6 games.
Yeah.
So they couldn't be an approved team, and it may not show on the one loss record.
No, I think that's completely fair. This is why I say I'm intrigued, because I think on paper, this is probably a 4 or 5 win team because of that schedule. But at the same time, would I be shocked if they upset an Iowa, Wisconsin, or a Michigan? Not at all. I think, and that's based solely on last year.
All right, that is it for quarter number three. We're going to look ahead to this week's schedule when we come back.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Dustin, I'm Jim. It's quarter number four. We are talking all things Big Ten football. So we got a nice slate coming up. I know our Nittany Lions are off this week, but there's plenty of other games to watch. And Dustin, I think this one's got to be headlined by Oregon at your Purdue Boilermakers, especially with Oregon having to travel a couple time zones.
And with Oregon being ranked number two, Purdue has 9 wins over teams ranked in the top two. Unfortunately, I don't think it's going to matter this week. But there are some storylines there. I just don't think it's going to matter. I think Oregon, I don't know if you have it in front of you, Jim, but they opened on as a 30.5-point favorite. I don't know if that line's moved at all, but that's very little faith in the Boilermakers this weekend.
The number I have is 28, but once you get to that point, 28, 30.
Tomato, tomato.
Exactly. It will be interesting to see, because that's a Friday night game. It's a pretty quick turnaround for Oregon, along with the travel. And they're not going to lose this game, but it'll be interesting to see how sharp they are going into this game, Dustin.
No, I do agree with you, because if Purdue was a little bit better, I feel like it's more of a trap game. I shouldn't say a little bit. If they were a lot a bit better, that feels more like a trap game because of the reasons you just mentioned. The time zones, playing on a Friday night. They have never played at Ross-State, so they don't have any familiarity. They haven't played Purdue since like 2009, so there's no familiarity there. There would be some intriguing things here. This is a game where I could potentially, now this is a big potentially, because Notre Dame ran Purdue out of its own stadium just a few weeks ago. I could potentially see in it being like 17-3, 17-10, you know, something along those lines where you don't feel too comfortable. And then Dan Lanning goes in, chews some behind and decides that they're going to play. And then, you know, wins the game 52-10 or something like that. I could see. So I think for those reasons, there is a little bit of intrigue, but I think you're right. I think Oregon's just much too talented.
Yes, I can see exactly that happening. Now, other than that game, Dustin, the other six games, talking point spreads, everyone else, the point spread is one score.
Yeah.
+7 is the biggest spread you'll find in the rest of the games. And let's highlight a couple of these games that are really good, really interesting, starting with Nebraska at Indiana. We're talking about Nebraska, really, you know, a pretty good team, and they're a 6.5-point underdog at Indiana. Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy. Yeah. And I just learned today that Indiana actually leads the all-time series against Nebraska. Isn't that
really
wild?
Indiana, I would have never guessed that.
No, the losingest program in the history of college football against a blue blood program. Like, that's crazy. But I think everybody's bought in on the offense that Indiana runs. They've scored 40 points in every game since their opener against FIU. Curtis Rourke looks really good. They've got some really good running backs in Tyson Lawton and Justice Ellison. Really good receivers in Elijah Surratt. They've got weapons. But I just question, we talk about Rutgers with the rock fights. I think Nebraska is going to be able to turn this game into a rock fight. And so how does Indiana respond when they're not scoring at will? That's my big question. And again, Nebraska's been really good in the first half of games this season, omitting the Purdue game. They struggled a lot in that game in the first half. But for the most part, they've been really good in the first half. They just kind of take their foot off the gas, it seems, in the second half. So they are going... Indiana's defense is going to have to show up, but also Nebraska is going to have to play 60 minutes of really good football if they're going to get out of Bloomington with a win.
I'm looking at strictly the Big Ten schedule, so I don't see the out-of-conference games. And Indiana has beaten UCLA, Maryland, and Northwestern.
Yeah.
That's the bottom of the Big Ten barrel. Do they have, and I'm asking that as a serious question, do they have a legitimate out-of-conference win?
Nope. FIU, Charlotte, and Western Illinois, all bad teams.
So, yeah, it leads me to wonder still, is Indiana for real here? Boy, I'm really tempted to take Nebraska in this game, Dustin.
I would be too, especially if they're getting 6.5 points. I just don't think Indiana's been tested, and they are one of the only teams in the country, maybe the only team, I'd have to look at the statistic, that has not trailed this season. What's going to happen when they get punched in the mouth? Because it's going to happen. They're going to get punched, and how do you respond? And it's great that you always play with a lead, but in some regard, it would have been nice to maybe trail Maryland early in that game and see how your team fights out of it. So I don't know if Indiana gets off to a hot start and they score two quick touchdowns, maybe this thing is for real. But because of the level of competition, I think even under Tom Allen, people would have said we can be 6-0, and maybe they're 4-2 or 5-1. But this is where the second half of their schedule intensifies significantly. This is where you got to beat some of the big boys. And Indiana football has been a contender in this with this type of schedule for years, but are you going to shrink in the moment or are you going to deliver? And I think this week is where we're going to start to find out more about Kurt Cignetti and the Hoosiers.
And they still have Nebraska, Washington, Michigan, and Ohio State on their schedule. Yep. So they will get tested going forward. There's no doubt about that. I think the other headlining game is Michigan at Illinois. And Illinois is a 1-point underdog, at least with the book that I saw. Boy, that's a crazy game. I don't know which way to lean that way.
I tend to lean Illinois. Now, I know that they just won the ugliest game maybe they've played in a long time, right? 50-49 to Purdue, overtime. You had a 27-3 lead in the third quarter. You were up 40-28 with like a minute and a half to play. But I also think that after halftime, Illinois started looking ahead to Michigan. I think they thought that they had that game wrapped up and that they were going to just cruise to an easy win. And then Purdue made some changes and was able to make that a game. I really like Illinois in this game. I think because they can throw the football, I think because they have a good rushing attack. Now, we'll find out. They did not have Caden Fagan against Purdue. I do not know at this time if they'll have him. And we pre-record this, so maybe the information will be available after it's posted. I don't know if they're going to have him. That would be a huge loss for if he's not available. But I also think what Illinois can do is just load up the box. And their defense is going to be good enough to stop Michigan and dare the Wolverines to throw. And if that's the case, I don't have much faith in Michigan to move the ball or put points on the board.
And I trust Brett Bielema to do something like that, take advantage of a one-dimensional team. And Illinois, here's another situation that we talk about transfer quarterbacks and, you know, these veteran quarterbacks who can do the job. Illinois has one of those.
Yeah.
Michigan does not.
Yeah. And I think that's it. The other thing about this last week, and I don't mean to keep bringing up this last game, but that was a time when Illinois faced some adversity and still, just like I talked about with Penn State, right? Like sometimes you learn a lot from those games you play really ugly and you're still able to get a win. I think that they learned something from that. Like they can't get lackadaisical. They have to play perfect. They can't turn the ball over. They have to be alert for an entire 60 minutes. And I think that point is going to be hammered home. And I think that, again, this is an Illinois team that's one win away from bowl eligibility. I was talking with some Illinois people just a few days ago. Like, you look at their schedule after Michigan, they have a game against Oregon, Minnesota, Michigan State, Rutgers, Northwestern. You're looking at a 10-win Illinois team. Are they knocking on the door of a college football playoff appearance if they get a win against Michigan? Like, it's not out of the question.
Wow. I think what they will struggle with when we get to that 10-2 tiebreaker, do they have a signature win?
Sure.
Michigan, would be that at least close to one. Okay.
Right.
Now maybe Michigan Illinois beats them, if Ohio State beats them, you know, Michigan, and Michigan still has Oregon, Michigan may end up being what, like a 5-loss team.
Right.
So yeah. I'm not sure how much that will be a signature win. But regardless of that, if you're Illinois and you look and say, hey, we beat Michigan, the only game after that that looks like will be an underdog is Oregon.
Yeah. And that's my point. And I don't know that a 10-2 Illinois gets into the playoff, but I think the fact that you could get Illinois like in the conversation is a big deal and would help them with recruiting and would help with boosters and with sellouts and all that kind of stuff. So this is, I don't know that this is just a big game in terms of like this season. I think this is a big game in terms of the future of their program.
Yes. Yes. If they win this game, this gets them over a hurdle. It means people will start taking Illinois seriously.
Right.
Yes, this is not the same Michigan that we've seen the last 3 years. But regardless, for an Illinois team, it's kind of a little bit analogous to Penn State taking down USC. Yes, this is a 3-3 USC team right now, but it was still important and significant to win that game, USC on the road. I think it would be the same kind of win for Illinois. And again, they've got Michigan, though, at home, which I think is significant also. If there's anyone who cares about Illinois football, this should be a packed house for them.
For sure. And I think if they've not sold out, they're close to it. So it should be a really good environment, too.
Good for them. The last couple games that I think are of any interest are merely because we've still got this travel, the multiple time zones, where you have USC at Maryland, you have UCLA at Rutgers. I think what we'll probably be looking for is those road teams. Well, UCLA at Rutgers, Rutgers should bounce back, I hope, for their case. USC at Maryland, this is a question of, will USC still have a hangover after their last couple losses and traveling across country?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you'll find out how bought in USC is this week, because Maryland is not a good team. Like, sorry, Mike Loxley, he's done some really good things there, but this is a rebuilding year. They're not great. They only scored 10 points against Northwestern. It's not ideal. So we will find out how bought in USC is. And this now all of a sudden, Jim, this is a huge game for Rutgers, UCLA. UCLA is not good, but they've at least been competitive. They're kind of like the old school Rutgers, where you knew you were going to win, but you knew you were in a dogfight. If Rutgers, I'm throwing 9 wins out of the window now for Rutgers after what I saw against Wisconsin. Because I don't think they're going to beat USC on the road. They probably will drop to Illinois. So if you want to get 8 wins, got to do it. Got to start now. Got to have to beat UCLA.
The only thing for UCLA, traveled to Penn State, home for a game, now traveling again to Rutgers. Something to keep an eye on. Dustin, that is it. Thank you. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.